Today's topic is, this mic is very, I talk with my hands, okay. Today's topic is about the Virgin Mary, but obviously you can't put everything in one PowerPoint. So actually how this happened was that I've been attending Tesbah for maybe like 4 years now, and I learned how to read Coptic just by attending. And the first time I attended, it was weird for me. Just like everything was new. But when I started coming, I started listening to the words, and I discovered, I was like, there's something about this service. Like, what are they talking about? I analyzed every word, every line, and I was like, what are they saying? What do they mean when they say, she is the second heaven, or when they talk about the Virgin Mary, and then they start talking about Christ. Sorry, I printed the, because I don't know it by heart. Okay. So yeah, when they say, you are called righteous, O blessed one among women, the second tabernacle, I'm like, what are they talking about? Everything was so beautiful and so amazing that I kept coming, but I was like, I need to know more about this tasbihah. Like, what is it all about? So I got the opportunity for one of my classes to write a paper, and I decided to write on, I wanted to write about all of tasbihah, but I only had a limit of 3,000 words, and if you've ever written a paper, it's not a lot, if you love the topic. And so I went overboard, and I wrote more than 4,000 words, and I wrote to the prof, and I was like, please forgive me because I cannot write all this. And honestly, all I wrote was about the six first, you guys are familiar with this, so I don't need to explain, but so the Sunday Theotokia, I took the six first parts. So there, and each part represents a symbol, and then there's a seventh part that has, they talk about the rod of Aaron, and then the flower of incense, and then we say the gospel, and then the rest, so there's 18, or I think 18 in total, 18 parts, and then the rest kind of like everything that we're going to go through today. So I found that really interesting, and in my paper I didn't do that, but during my search, I went through every single line of the Theotokias, and I found out what it means. So now next time, next time I go to Tesbihah, it's going to be full, because I'll actually understand what's going on, and hopefully you will understand more too, because I'm sure we can all learn some new things. Okay. Next. Okay. I know you already know this, so I'm going to ask you another question. I'm going to ask you, where do we learn about the Theotokos? Like, where do we... Like, we know so much about her, but where do we get this information? Okay, Old Testament. But it doesn't really tell us much, the Old Testament. Like, where do we know that she entered the temple? Didn't you guys just celebrate that on Sunday? The entrance of the temple of the Theotokos. So where do we know that story from? Where do we get it from? It's not in the Old Testament. Is it in the New Testament? It's not in the New Testament. There's actually very little in the New Testament. Like, there's almost nothing about the Virgin Mary in the New Testament. So where do we get all this information? Any idea? No? Okay, tradition. But there's a specific... Okay, I thought you might know, but there's a specific book called The Gospel of St. James. Now, it's not... has anyone heard of that, the Gospel of St. James? No, okay. I looked this up, so don't worry. I listened to a topic by Coptic, just be careful just in case, but so everything I'm going to say is okay in the church, if Abuna would say that. It's not a canonical book, so it's not part of our Bible, but it's part of our tradition. So everything we know about the Virgin Mary is mostly from that book, which is the Gospel of St. James. What it usually is called, like the Proto-Evangelium of St. James or whatever. So I have this book, A lot of people don't know this, but my second name is not Sylvia. It's not Sylvia, but it's Mary. So in church, I'm named after the Virgin Mary. So when I was baptized, my name was Mary. So my church name, if you want, if I go visit like a priest or something and they ask me what's my name, I tell them it's Mary because that's my church name. If I tell them it's Michelle, they're going to be like, what's your church name? So I tell them it's Mary. So that's something about myself, and that's why I love the Virgin Mary so much. So I bought this book because I wanted to learn more about who my patron saint is, like who am I named after, you know? This has everything about the Virgin Mary, everything. It's crazy. I didn't go through it all, but it goes from the moment of the like her conception all the way to her ascension, like her assumption. So, and this gets all its information from hymns. Thank you. It gets all its information from hymns and from church tradition and a bit from the gospel, the little that we know. So, and a lot of, so none of us have ever probably seen the Gospel of St. James, though we do have it written, but not, like in the church we never see this. But we celebrate all these feasts and we sing all these hymns and all these things come from this lost gospel of St. James, okay? Which the church accepts, but it's not canonical book of the gospel. Okay, so now going to the Theotokias from Tasbeha. I just took this first six and I'm gonna go backwards because the coolest ones are the first two. And I'm going to get really excited, so sorry. Okay, so if you've attended Tasbeha, you know that the first thing we call her is the second tabernacle. Then we go, the second part of the Theotokia is the Ark of the Covenant. The third is the mercy seat. The fourth is the golden pot. Fifth, the golden lampstand. And then the golden censer. So where do we get these six items from? They're all from the same place. Anyone know? No. Exodus 25, yeah. Exodus when the Lord is telling Moses how to build the temple, and then he talks about all these things. I'm not very familiar with the Old Testament, and actually, Tasbeha made me go and open the Old Testament and read it more, and I still haven't gone through it all, but I've read most of it now because I was like, this is so cool, and you'll see why. Okay, so I'm going to start from the sixth and then go to the first. I know it's confusing, but you'll see why. It just progresses better like that. So everything in italic and in quotation will be from Tasbeha, you'll recognize it. I couldn't put it all because all the verses are really cool, but hopefully you know them, so or you're familiar a bit with them. So the first one is the golden censer that we compared the Theotokos to. And Amir, Uncle Amir spoke about this. I don't know what to, okay. So you spoke about this last week when we said she's not just the box, right, that we spoke about, but she's actually, the Son took flesh from her. So the censer, how, like, everyone knows what a sharia looks like, right? Like the bowl, we're talking about the bowl, that's what the Virgin Mary is compared to, and then this incense, which is the coal, that's Jesus Christ. And Saint Cyril of Alexandria is the one who made this comparison when he was trying to defend the nature or the personhood of Christ, was saying, you know, the fire and the coal, they were never, they don't mingle together, they don't mix, like the fire doesn't become the coal and the coal doesn't become the fire, they're separate. And that's how we know that, that's how he was trying to explain that Christ is fully human and fully divine and he doesn't mix and they're not separated. So we have that. But from the Old Testament, we can find in Isaiah where he talks about this live coal. There's a few passages. Does anyone want to read them, or should I just read them? Okay. Okay, so here we know the church fathers tell us all of these things, but in this passage, the live coal that I put in bold and the tongues, the live coal, like we said, is Jesus Christ. This passage actually talks about the Eucharist. And so the seraphim, which is the angel, goes to Isaiah and touches this live coal on his lips. And he says, "Behold, this has touched your lips." Not sure if they do this in the Coptic Church, but in the Eastern tradition, the priest, when he takes communion, he will say that verse. He will say, "Behold, this has touched my lips. Your lawless is taken away, and my sins is cleansed." So when the priest, he'll recite that. So even in the censer of Aaron, we can see the Eucharist. And this is just a censer. There's other symbols that we're going to see later on that are like more obvious. That's like, okay, the Eucharist. But even within this symbol, it relates to the Eucharist. And we see it in the book of Isaiah. And they say that the tongs that touch the coal is like the Virgin Mary. Okay. Now we have the golden lampstand. All of these items, by the way, they're in the same place. They're in the temple that God told Moses to build. So here we have an icon of Moses and Aaron. And if you look closely, you see the lampstand with seven branches. And in this icon, you see a medallion kind of on the lampstand, and you see the Virgin Mary. So even in iconography, they place the Virgin Mary on these symbols because they know, the church fathers know, that in the Old Testament, that's what, like, whoever wrote, like Moses, for example, for the book of Exodus, that God was trying to tell us that all these things are coming and it's not what you think, okay? It's not the building of the temple. Also, in the Coptic tradition, we don't have this, but in the introduction of the creed, what do we call the Virgin Mary? We call her the mother of the true light. So the golden lampstand is also represents her humility, because no one looks at the stand that the light is holding. Everyone looks at the light, right? And so it shows her humility, how she carried Christ, the true light, and she didn't care that no one was looking at her, you know? Like, the lampstand doesn't try to be the light, or doesn't try to, you know, the lampstand is trying to show the light. And so it's a perfect symbol of the Virgin Mary trying to show the true light, who is Jesus Christ. I found this interesting because I started thinking, okay, what does it say in the New Testament about the light? So I go to the New Testament and I'm thinking, okay, so we know that in John he tells us, "I am the light." Right? I am the light. And everyone knows that Christ is the true light. But then in the New Testament, it says something else. It says, "You are the light of the world." Then I thought, what? I was like, how, you know, he's the light, and then we're the light? And then I'm thinking, okay, so the Theotokos, who is like our example, was the lampstand. But then God comes as Jesus Christ and tells us, "You're not the lampstand, you're the light." He's telling us, "You're the light." Like, he took us to a whole new level, right? And it blew my mind when I read this, and we'll see more of that, but the light was something like, of course we're not God, we're not the true light, but we are those who shine his light. You know, he doesn't say you're the stand that the light is put on. No, like he calls it, "You are the light," you know? So that's amazing that we need to hopefully see all these symbols that the Theotokos, all the titles that we give her, and see what God does from the Old Testament to the New Testament, and he totally transforms it and says all these things that you're greater than all of this. You're not just this, you know, you're this. You're called to be this, right? And so we're called to be the light of the world, which I found was really amazing. Okay, now we have the golden pot. The golden pot, so the does everyone is familiar with the story of like Exodus with Moses? So Jesus sends bread from heaven for them while they're crossing through the desert. And so we call the Virgin Mary the pot which holds this bread. So this pot was actually in the temple inside of an ark that we'll see later, with the Ten Commandments and the Rod of Aaron. So those three items were in this ark. Sorry. And like we said, St. Mary is not just the vessel. He took her flesh, which I didn't think of, and that it blew my mind last week. So like we were saying, talking about the light, how God called us the light in the New Testament. In the New Testament, we're not the pot. We receive his blood. It was his body and blood. Like, just think with me. Like, it's so amazing. It makes me, I can't believe it. When I was writing my paper, I literally, it took me so long because every time I would write something, I was like, what? And, sorry, this is, okay. So, I knew this was going to happen. I should have calmed down a bit before. I guess there's more meditating for this talk than really talking about it, because you can't say more than what I just said, right? Just think about it, and when we call the Virgin Mary, so she carried Christ in her womb, who is the true bread, but then Christ lets us become that person that carries him every single time we receive him in the Eucharist. So these symbols, what I'm trying to get at is that these symbols are not just for the Virgin Mary. We become what she was, or she is. Okay. The mercy seat is the part on top of the ark. So that's the ark with the three items that I named. And then the mercy seat is actually where God said he would reveal himself. He told Moses that you should build two cherubims out of gold, and between these two cherubims, I will speak to you. So I found this icon, which is cool. I've never seen it before, but this is exactly what it is. And the Virgin Mary is called the mercy seat because that's where God is revealed to us through her, and she becomes the mercy seat. And the second verse says, "You too, O Mary, thousands of thousands, myriads and myriads overshadow you." And this reminds us of, you'll see a bunch of icons of the Virgin Mary where just angels are everywhere. And it reminds us of, in the feast we celebrated on Sunday, when she was fed by angels, right? That's what we say. That's what the tradition says. And also at her dormition when she fell asleep, well, that's what we should say, when she fell asleep, angels were all over, angels appeared all over and start praising. And even at the birth of Christ, we know that angels were there and saying glory to God, right? So it's a good representation or parallel from the two cherubims and how in the New Testament we see the cherubims again. Okay. This is the cool part. Like, not that the other part weren't cool, but this is, like, really cool. Okay. So we have the ark. This icon I could not find on Google. It was in the book that I have, so I had to, like, take a picture of it and put it. It's an icon in a monastery in Greece somewhere. But if you look closely again, so the ark is the triangle thing. And on the top of the ark, there's the icon of the Virgin Mary. And then the table is the altar. So again, there's also an icon of the Virgin Mary. We won't be talking about the altar, but that's also a symbol. And the two cherubims and everything. So there's so much to talk about the ark, because the ark is what they said is what contained God. And it says here, the ark overlaid round about with gold that was made with wood that would not decay. That was something I was like, the wood that would not decay. What are they talking about? And why is everything always like out of gold and pure? And what does this mean? I could have mentioned these before because everything was made out of gold, but I didn't want to be repetitive. So, okay. So we know that the pure gold that the ark was made of represents the Virgin Mary's purity. And she was. That's why we call her ever virgin, and almost pure and all holy. And the wood that would not decay. There was two. Many fathers would talk about Christ in the Theotokia. They talk about the wood that would not decay. It symbolizes Christ. When we go through the ark, that's when we talk here. I'll just read the few verses. The ark overlaid round about with gold that was made with wood that would not decay. It foretold the sign of God, the Word, who became man without separation. So even in the verses of the Theotokia, it tells us what. What happened with the Jews and whatever, and then I can read the New Testament. But no, what I discovered after doing this is that you cannot read the New Testament if you do not read the Old Testament. You will not understand the New Testament at all. Like now, after doing this, I'm going back to read the New Testament all over again because my eyes are open to so many things. And we're gonna see later on, going with the ark, how it's like. We don't understand that the people like Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, who wrote the New Testament, knew the Old Testament. They were writing as they knew the Old Testament. So we also have to know the Old Testament. That's why it's like, you know, first in the Bible, because we have to read it first to understand the New Testament. If we just go to read the New Testament, it's almost like a story of, oh, that's, you know, Jesus was born, and he does this and he does that. But when you read the Old Testament, you're like, wow, now I get it. Now I get why they say this. Now I get why they keep doing this and all that stuff. So going back to the wood that would not decay, it represents the undefiled birth of Christ, but it also represents Christ not being Christ's nature. So because after the third verse, it says, one nature out of two, a holy divinity, co-essential with the Father and incorruptible, which we know that Saint Cyril defended, right? And we have one of the church fathers from the early centuries, so 100 years after Christ. He says, now the Lord was without sin, being in his human nature incorruptible wood. So he's doing the same comparison. is from the virgin. So the wood is from the virgin. So his flesh is from her flesh, right? We're talking about that box, that wooden box last week. This is it. This is what they're talking about. And being seethed, as it were, in pure gold of the word within and of the spirit without. So we know that in the hymn it says, clothed with divinity within and without. And this is what they're talking about, because when Christ came in her, she was clothed with this purity, this pure gold within and without, just like the ark was covered with gold inside and on the outside. And I don't know, but I'm not sure if it's the same, but in Byzantine iconography, the Virgin Mary is wearing like a red cover on top, and we say that was the divinity, because she was covered with divinity when she carried Christ. Okay, so there's many parallels when it comes to the ark. When we go back to the Old Testament, we have, there's actually four parallels, but here I have three. And I put like who they're compared to, and then we're going to talk about the stories. So the first one actually is King David. So in the Old Testament, we have King David who was receiving, he didn't have the ark because the ark was taken from him, and other people had it. I don't remember who, but and so he was about to receive it, and this ark stayed outside of David's house for 3 months. Okay, so for 3 months it stayed outside of David's house or city, and then in the New Testament we have Saint Mary who stayed 3 months with Elizabeth, right? And we said that the Virgin Mary is the ark. So the actual ark, the physical ark from the Old Testament, was outside of the city of David, David's city. And then in the New Testament, we have Saint Mary, who was with Elizabeth for 3 months. Okay, and then we have the ark. When the ark arrived to David, he was so happy and overwhelmed, he started leaping for joy. And this word leap is the same word in the New Testament when, which we have here, when St. Mary and Elizabeth greet, and we have St. John the Baptist. Has anyone ever seen this icon? It's the coolest icon ever, and you give it to pregnant women, like it's like you're supposed to give it to them as a gift. And when I discovered this, I was like, oh my God. It's called the icon of the visitation. So we have the Virgin Mary's in red. You remember I was talking about the red cloak on top. And we see Christ. I don't know if you see it, but Christ is blessing St. John the Baptist. And St. John the Baptist is like this, like his arms are crossed and he's bowing, okay? It's an amazing icon because it shows that even, and people, the church actually uses this icon to defend against abortion, side note, but to say that even in the womb, St. John the Baptist knew that it was the Lord, and he started leaping for joy, okay? And they even say he danced before he learned to walk. Like he was dancing before he learned how to walk, before he was even born, because he knew that Christ was coming. The same way that David was dancing when he received the ark, because the ark was so special to the Jews, because that's where God was. That's where they felt that they thought God was, and they had a tabernacle. They didn't have a temple yet. And the tabernacle was just a tent that they would move around. And so this ark was so special. Every time they got taken away, they felt like God wasn't with them. So when they received it, David was dancing for joy. And this word is the same word in the New Testament. So we know that, you know, there's that parallel. I have no idea. I don't know. I should. I'll ask. I have no idea. I don't know, because I can't think of the story. I don't think there was a third person. Maybe it could be someone. Yeah, exactly. Like something like that. No. No. Yeah, I don't know. I'll ask. Maybe someone. I'm sure because icons. There's so much details in icons. They don't put something from. Okay. The third parallel that I have here is okay. So in this Proto-Evangelion, so this Gospel of St. James, there's a story of Salome, who was a kinswoman or whatever. So she was actually St. Mary's first cousin, we know. And she was there at the birth of Christ. And she was the one who actually washed Christ for the first time. Because, you know, when a baby's born, you need to wash him. So the story goes is that when the Virgin Mary gave birth, she didn't, Salome didn't believe that she was still a virgin. So she wanted to check for herself that if she was still a virgin. So as she was about to go and put her hand on the Virgin Mary to check if she was still a virgin, her hand withered. And so she believed at that moment that she knew that there was something, bigger than that. And she's actually the first, they say she was the first one to witness her ever virginity or whatever, you know. So we get that from her, and the church takes that from her. The same way in the Old Testament, we have Uzzah, I don't know how to spell pronounce his name. So they're carrying this ark on, I think, like a donkey or something, and they were carrying him from place to place because they kept moving. And the ark was about to fall off, and so he goes to grab the ark to place it, right? And he died instantly because he touched the ark. Because the ark was so holy, you weren't allowed to touch it. Like, they have like batons or whatever. I don't know how to call it. rods, I don't know, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is interesting. No, it's thank you for that, because I actually didn't know the full story. So they parallel Oh, really? Okay, so Cynthia told. Where is the icon? Are you sure? Okay, so apparently it's Zechariah praying in the temple. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe. That's a possible answer. There's one more thing that is a parallel. It's the word overshadow. So we know that, I don't know if I put this in another slide, but we know God says that he overshadows the ark. And then the same word for overshadow, which means like dwelling, is in the New Testament in Luke when he talks about the birth of Christ, and he says the glory overshadows the Theotokos, or the Virgin Mary. So there's many, many parallels, but those were the big ones. And yeah. Okay. The last, or the first symbol in Theotokia, but the last one that I'm going to be talking about is the second tabernacle. So the tabernacle was a tent, and then they eventually made a temple that actually was like in Jerusalem and with stone and everything, but the tabernacle was just a tent that would carry around. And God said that he dwelt in this tabernacle. So the same way that the Virgin Mary had God inside of her, so God dwelt in her for 9 months, right? And in Exodus it says, I will dwell among the children of Israel and I will be their God. Okay. So can someone, this is not a full passage, it's like just quotes, but it's from the book of Maccabees. I want someone to read this and then we'll see after. There's another passage from Luke and then we're going to read it. So can someone, Martel? There's a few things that I want you guys to keep in mind, okay? So does everyone understand what's happening? So Jeremiah takes the ark, the altar of the incense and the tabernacle, and he takes it to a cave. He seals the cave, and he doesn't let anyone go because he says only God will reveal to us when we're, like, only God is when the Lord will disclose these things and the glory of the Lord and the cloud will be seen. So when these things are going to be seen, we get to see these items again. So I want you to keep in mind the cave and the glory of the Lord, okay? So there's like this historian that everyone, like the church knows of. His name is Josephus or something. And he says that there was at one point where the ark was no longer in the temple. So the temple and the like when King Herod was in place or whatever, he had a temple. So the temple, the same temple that was in the time of Christ, there was no ark in that temple. The ark disappeared, like since the time of, I think, Solomon like and David and stuff. They haven't seen the ark since then. And then when Christ was born, there was no ark. Okay? So where is this ark? The church said, when I read this, oh my God, the church said, they're like, okay, so this temple had no ark, but it doesn't matter because the ark was coming to live in this temple when she was a little girl. So when the Virgin Mary was presented to the temple, Zacharias knew that this temple, it's not like the altar that we have today. They were only allowed to enter it once a year. So imagine this little girl, you know, going to live in the Holy of Holies, the holiest place for the Jews. It was the holiest place in the whole world, like not just in the temple. It was the holiest place in the whole world. And this is where the closer you are to the temple, the more pure you are, like just physically, right? So the Virgin Mary is living in the temple, and we just said that she was the ark, right? So this ark that they were looking for, the Jews, that they haven't seen in so long, in hundreds of years, is now being brought back into the temple as a little girl. And she lived there, we say like 12 years or something, right? And there's this whole feast, like the feast of the entrance of the temple, by itself, you could talk hours and hours about it. It's amazing, like the steps, the amount of steps that she took and how she ran up instead of like, just like every little detail of this feast has a meaning to it, and it's amazing. Like even this Sunday at our church, where the gospel is the genealogy of Christ from Matthew, and you know there's 14, 14, 14, right? Like 14 generation, 14, 14. And then we know that, Abuna told me this last week, David in Hebrew is composed from three letters. D, O, and D, like some sort, something like that. And, no? And in Hebrew, like every letter corresponds to a number, and the numbers that it corresponds to is like 646 or 646. No, 464. That makes more sense. Okay, 464, and then if you put that together, it's 14, right? And anyways, it's like every little thing, and me and I'm talking about my spiritual father, Abuna Nectarios. Me and him were just going over these parallels, and we're just like, oh my God, this is so cool, and oh my God, this is so cool. And even if it's some people, they don't care about this stuff, like especially like the one I just said, it's like little details. But if you think about it, God, there's no way anyone could write a more perfect book. Like every single thing in the Bible is written so perfectly that there's no way a human person could have ever written it. It has to be from God. Like, everything is just so perfect. Like, everything from the Old Testament, it relates to the New Testament. There's not one thing that's, like, useless or whatever, you know? It's like God planned everything so perfectly from the time of Adam to the rest of the end of the world, right? Until the everlasting, like, there is no end for us. And it makes me think, like, if God can plan all of these years so perfectly, with the Jews messing up over and over and over again, like, how much more, is he going to plan my life so perfect, you know? This is, like, on a small scale. Every single one of us, God plans our life so perfectly, just like as he planned all of creation so perfectly. There just can't be a more perfect way to, like, write or have like the story of Christ, you know, which makes sense. He's God. Okay, so this arc that was supposed to be revealed is finally revealed in the Gospel of Luke. So does anyone want to read? So the glory of the Lord, you guys remember from the book of Maccabees, they said it will not be revealed until the glory of the Lord has been seen. And we don't see the word glory of the Lord does not appear in the Bible until the Gospel of Luke. And this is the passage at the birth of Christ. So the Jews would have known, this is why I'm saying that you need to read the Old Testament to understand the New Testament. Because if you're reading the New Testament, you're like, oh, that's nice, the glory of the Lord, you know, obviously he's God, there's going to be glory. But if you read the Old Testament, you're going to see that the tabernacle and the ark and the incense must be somewhere. If the glory of the Lord is there, then the temple is somewhere. That's how the Jews saw it. So when the shepherds knew the scriptures. The Magi didn't know, right, because they were Gentiles. But the shepherds knew. So that when the angel tells them, or when they witness this glory of the Lord, they're obviously afraid because they're like, something's going to happen. We haven't seen this glory of the Lord in like 500 years. What is going on? And the angel tells them exactly what's going on. The angel tells them, do not be afraid, for behold, I bring you good tidings of great joy, which will be to all people. For there is born to you this day in the city of David a Savior who is Christ the Lord. So the shepherds are like, okay, the ark must be somewhere. There must be a cave somewhere, right? Something's going to happen. And the angel tells the shepherd actually where exactly to go. They said, you're going to find this, you're going to find this, you're going to find this. Go to these places. The angel that talks to the Magi doesn't tell them, that you're going to find this. It just says, follow a star, right? But for the shepherds that knew the Old Testament, the angel is like, you're going to get this. You're going to see. You know what's going on because the glory of the Lord appeared. So it brings us to the nativity. It brings us to the birth of Christ, which me and Cynthia will be celebrating in 6 days. And you guys in maybe 2 weeks. But no, it's just two different calendars. We're both Orthodox again. Yeah, hopefully. Anyway, so I just like can't believe Christmas is so soon. That's why. And it's just, okay, so let's just go all the way back to how we started this talk. So we started this talk with what? We started this talk with the golden censer, right? And then we get to Christmas. Like, what? Like, I'm doing this search in this book, and I'm reading, I had the Bible open all week this week, just like reading different passages and trying to understand, because I don't know the Old Testament well at all. Like, I have to read and read commentaries and, like, are you sure? Like, I'm trying to make sure it's Orthodox and make sure that the Coptic Church, you know, accepts this too. And I discovered that, like, we have all the same teachings, so we shouldn't worry. And, but it was just amazing. Like, it started with me trying to do a project on the Virgin Mary, and then it brought me to Christmas. And it was just amazing because this is what our whole life is supposed to come to. Our whole life, our whole searching for God is supposed to bring us to this feast. So the fathers say that this feast is like the source of all the water, like the fountain for all the other feasts. This feast tells us about everything. This feast tells us that Christ is going to die and is going to rise again. This feast tells us that we're going to be tempted by the devil. This feast tells us that we should be baptized, you know. This feast tells us about everything. It tells us about the Trinity. It tells us that there will be darkness in the world, but we have Christ, who is our light. And we have our cave right there, right? The cave that we were looking for, when Jeremiah hid these things in the cave. Now we have Christ, who was born in a cave, right? And we have, actually, the commentaries of this icon say that the focal point of this icon is not even Christ, it's the Virgin Mary. Because she is the new ark, right? And Christ, who's Christ? He's the temple. And just think of that. So we said, Christ dwelt in the Virgin Mary, right? But now we're saying that Christ is a temple. And in the temple, we have the ark. So it's because Christ is God, right? And so we become all these things. And then what does Christ tell us in the New Testament? He says, I think I have it here. He says, you are the temple. He says, you are the temple. He's giving us his title. He's telling us, I'm going to come live in you. I'm being born, okay? I am coming to you. Now you have become the temple. So we went from all this, the Jews building the tabernacle and the ark and gold and all these things and searching for God and carrying this ark from here to there and everything. And then the ark disappears and we don't know where it goes. And then the glory of the Lord appears and the Jews understand, right? The Jews see that the ark is coming back. But some got it, but others didn't. And we see that the Virgin Mary is the ark, and that Christ is the temple, and then Christ comes, right, and God is being born, and he tells us, you're the light, you're the temple, okay? He brings us on this whole new level, and he says, you can be like me. I came to be like you, so you can be like me. And this is the whole feast of Christmas. It tells us everything. It tells us everything that happened in the councils. It tells us everything that's written in the Old Testament and in the New Testament. Tells us everything about our life. This, like, when Father Anthony gave the talk, I think it was 3 weeks ago, about Christmas, this is what he was trying to tell us. It's so hard today, in today's world, to, like, focus on Christmas. It's so hard. It's like, I still have 2 exams left, and Christmas is in like 2 days, and shopping, and even like we have a Christmas play on Sunday, and one of my kids didn't show up, so I have to be in the play, so I have to memorize lines, and I'm playing the Abuna, like as if like I need to, you know. Anyways, like, okay, now I'm like venting, but no, but it's just like, sorry, I get so. I can't, there's no words for this. Like, God is giving us everything. He's giving us everything. Like, we we are so blessed in the Orthodox Church, you have no idea. Like, there's, you go to another church, they don't know anything about this. This is like a secret. This is like, God is giving us like the road map. He's giving us everything. He's giving us the tools. He gave us the Bible. Just read, all you have to do is read the Bible. You don't want to read the Bible, or you don't know what to read, attend tasbihah, you'll learn all of this. It's written. Like, I could, instead of this whole talk, I could have just read this. It explains everything in this. And this is why the 13th part of the Theotokia, it says, all these together direct us to the miraculous birth of Virgin Mary. Now tasbihah makes sense to me. Now I can pray in peace, and instead of analyzing the words, I can absorb them and pray. And I hope that we can all pray together next. Now we're in the month of Kiyah, which is like, woohoo, like it's like super. I've never attended the full vigil, but I've attended a bit. And like all the hymns in the Coptic Church are amazing. Like there's even hymns about like the burning bush, right? Just read the words of that and you'll get all of the theology about how the Virgin Mary is the bush and Christ is the fire and she was not consumed, right? Like, it's all in the hymn. And there's the golden censer, right? There's a hymn about the censer too. So it's all there. Anyways, like, I could talk forever about this, and there's more and more and more. And these are the rest, or some of the symbols. So the rod of Aaron, the flower of incense, the burning bush, Jacob's ladder, many, many, many signs. So that's it.